Sometimes you choose courage, and at other times it's forced upon you. Courage Unraveled is a podcast series where you get to listen to insights, discussions, conversations, and stories from people from all walks of life. You'll be served with dollops of courage, resilience, and strength here. So come along and be educated and inspired. You just may find new ways to flex your own courage muscle. My name is Sana Turnock, and I'm your host. Tanya Printy is a mother and single parent to seven children. She has survived three abusive marriages, was the main carer for one of her husbands who was a schizophrenic, and has had to navigate her way out of intense periods of anxiety and deep depression. Tanya's lived experience has been the catalyst for her wanting to help people create a new life for themselves. She knows it's possible, as she is living proof of this. Tanya's belief is that you can become your own hero. You are not what happened to you. You are what you choose to become. I caught up with Tanya online. It's a real privilege to be able to share these inspiring podcasts of courage with you. The work undertaken takes many hours to put together and is self-funded. You can support the podcast series by becoming a patron and receiving access to patron-only specials and exclusives. Choose the tier that suits you. The Courage Journal is a fantastic adjunct to these podcast stories. Do you want to start flexing your own courage muscle? Then grab your very own journal. Visit courageunraveled.com to find out more about the journal and how you can become a Courage Unraveled patron. Tanya, welcome to Courage Unraveled.
Thank you.
So let's get into it, shall we? You are a certified life coach, NLP practitioner and timeline therapist, and were led down this path due to some very intense times of your life. To provide context, let's move into the time when you were first married at 18. What was that like?
That was my everything. That was the path I wanted to go down. I wanted to be married. I think I just got that urge a lot younger than a lot of people did at the time.
Your husband developed schizophrenia during your marriage. What were his symptoms?
They classed it as what's called a drug-induced psychosis. So basically he started getting depressed and went to the doctors, and that just led down a rabbit hole of treatment basically. One drug wouldn't work, they'd add another drug, then I'd add another drug to counteract that, and eventually he was on a myriad of medication, and basically it led him down the path of schizophrenia. So he would get uncontrollable thoughts in his head, he'd hear the voices, they'd be telling him very bad things, and they were telling him to end his life. So it was not a good period for him.
When did he actually start to develop those symptoms? Was it during a particular event, or did it just gradually?
Yeah, it was actually. He hurt his back at work. The doctor directed him to have 3 months off work. And during that time, he basically, with the pain and with not being able to do anything, started to get quite depressed and then turned to drugs to counteract that.
So that was his sanctuary in that sense?
It was, yeah.
How did it impact family life?
He never returned to work from that point. So I was the sole income earner, which, 18 years old, and I was supporting both of us because he wasn't able to get back to work. We then had our first child when I turned 21. And again, I was the one that was returning to work while he was the one supposedly watching our child. Unfortunately, because of the illness that he had, that wasn't always possible. So yeah, it was a burden.
When you went to work, was that full-time or part-time?
No, it was part-time. I couldn't leave him full-time. I really had to be mindful that he needed me. I was basically his carer. So if I wasn't there to support him emotionally, he would unravel.
What do you mean by that?
I mean that at certain points when he was at his worst, if I was away from him for an extended time, I didn't know if he'd be alive or dead when I got home.
Okay, so you really had to keep a watchful eye on his well-being, essentially.
I did, and it really impacted on what I was able to do. So I could only work for a couple of hours at a time. I couldn't be away from him all day. He just couldn't handle that. He really needed me emotionally.
You managed to leave, yeah. So how did that end up happening when he had such a dependency on you?
That is a very, very good question, because it was hard. It was so hard. I didn't want to be somebody who walked away from someone who needed me. I believed in my heart that if he had a physical illness, such as, cancer or, a debilitating illness that I would have stayed. So I didn't want to be a person who walked away because it was a mental illness. I didn't want to make that differentiation. But one day I had to decide that my life and my son's life and moving forward was what I had to do for myself, and I had to cut his dependency. Basically, one day when he rang and said that if I didn't go see him, he would try to harm himself, I just said, well, ring your mum. And that was the turning point for me. I took away my responsibility.
And so you left and you took your child. Did you just leave the house or did you do it gradually?
Gradually, definitely gradually. We had a lot of backwards and forwards. I would cave. I would go back and allow him to keep using me, basically. He was using me to make himself feel better. And, yeah, it wasn't until I made that decision for myself that the dependency had to end.
Do you think he just thought that you were strong?
Possibly. I know that he definitely needed me and he relied on me. The problem with that was that he wasn't doing anything to help himself. As much as I tried to help him, and I did everything humanly possible to help him, and he didn't do the work himself.
Okay. Moving on, you ended up remarrying sometime later, or was it within a year?
I think we met about 2 years after I'd separated.
And what were you doing at that time?
I was working full time. My son was in daycare, which he was loving, and, yeah, just basically daily life.
And what was that relationship like?
Well, you'd think I'd learn second time round, but unfortunately I didn't. I kept allowing myself to be treated badly because in my mind saying, well, he's not as bad as the last one was. So I kept overlooking and not listening to the red flags that were coming up. It turns out that I married a narcissist, which I had no idea what that was until I went to counselling and she gave me a sheet of paper and said, this is basically it. And I said, yeah, that's it. That's who I married.
What was on the list?
Oh, basically they destroy you emotionally. They don't want you to be a strong person who can handle things yourself. They want you to rely on them. They make you believe that absolutely nothing you do is right. Yeah, lots of things on that list, but I allowed myself to be treated very badly.
It's almost like the opposite to the first marriage, but still as destructive, yeah?
Definitely more emotionally destructive, yes.
Your first husband was dependent on you, whereas in the next relationships, it was, you know, like they were wanting you to be dependent on them. So it's the opposite, but still destructive.
Yes, he did want me dependent on him for my needs, but he was still dependent on me. I had to do everything. He basically sat back and expected me to wait on him hand and foot. Yeah, it was a strange relationship.
How old were you then?
I think I was 25 when we got married. Yeah. We had 4 children together. So we had, towards the end of the relationship, some bad times. And we did separate when our 3rd child was 4 months old. We did get back together for a brief time and conceived number 4. So we tried again for another few months.
Eventually, your husband left, this husband number 2, and he refused to help you pay the mortgage, car loan, and other loans. So what happened during this time?
So from the day he walked out, he refused to pay the home mortgage. My father was very generous and he helped me pay a few while I was trying to explain to the ex-husband that he did still have a responsibility. He was quite nasty in his approach, and even though I wanted to sell the house so that we could get rid of the mortgage and move on with our credit rating intact, his decision was to allow the bank to take it. He said that he would rather see me living in a cardboard box on the side of the road than see me get anything from the sale of the house. So it was quite a nasty breakup. I did go to court, and the court ruled in my favour that he had to pay the mortgage until the house was sold. But he didn't. So I had to go back to court again, and basically in between the court cases of a couple of months, the bank wouldn't wait any longer and they did take the house. The same with the car. I could pay that for about 8 or 9 months. I managed to pay it on my own, but it was just too difficult. So eventually the car was also repossessed.
So he didn't pay for it. So did anything happen to him in the end?
No, No, because unfortunately with our court system, it's not up to the court to follow through on their own rulings. It's up to me to go back to court to follow through on the rulings. And unfortunately, when the house went, that was how I was supposed to be paying the lawyer with the sale of the house. I couldn't get a lawyer to represent me anymore because I couldn't pay for it.
Yeah, right. Do you think he just used the knowledge that he knew about you that you wouldn't perhaps pursue it any further in order to do what he ended up doing?
I'm not sure about that, but I do know that when he makes his mind up, he's made his mind up and he decided he wasn't paying and there wasn't anyone who was going to tell him differently.
Did he or you initiate the separation?
He did initially. We'd had a conversation that he didn't like and he walked out and left. Then that night, supposedly attempted to overdose. I say supposedly because it was only Panadol and he only took 12. But he led me down the path of having to ring the police and have the police go out looking for him because I was scared for his life, obviously. But it turns out that he didn't do anything detrimental enough that would actually hurt himself. So, yeah, it was quite a difficult night. He came home. The police instructed him to go to the hospital. He didn't. That's fine. But the next day I just said, we can't do this. So it was kind of, he initiated it. But yeah, I think we both wanted it in the end.
To separate, you mean?
Yes.
All right. Fast forward, and you remarried for a third time.
Yes.
And in 2014, you had twins. So now you have a total of 7 kids.
That's right.
With 6 being 9 and under.
Yeah, they were at that stage when the twins were born. So we had quite a few little ones in our care. The twins were a total surprise, obviously. We did intend to have a baby, but when we were told it was 2, that was definitely not expected.
What was the household like?
Oh, crazy for a while, definitely. Yeah, with so many little ones. Yeah, you have to really learn to let go of your ideal world. You have to learn to accept that, you know, you go into other friends' homes and they're so under control and, you know, they have their 2 children and kitchen's tidy and that sort of thing. And, you know, that can really get to you when you have an idea of what you want life to be like and you have to learn to let that go and go with it.
When did things start to go dark for you in terms of anxiety, depression? You also thought about suicide and had some attempts, is that correct?
Yes, I did. About 7 months after I had moved in with my third husband, that's when I started to get very depressed. I had had depression in the past, but that's when it came back. Over the course of probably the next 4 years, my mental health really deteriorated and so did my physical health. I developed adrenal fatigue and some quite bad hormonal issues. So not only was I mentally depleted, but I was physically depleted and I had extreme fatigue, couldn't get off the bed for weeks at a time and that sort of thing. So yeah, made life very difficult.
So how are you managing in terms of having all these kids and then you've got husband number 3? Was he helping at this stage to take care of the kids?
Yeah, it's quite a complex thing. He made me dependent on him for everything. He made me not be able to care for myself, let alone my own children. No, sorry, I shouldn't say he made me. That's not true. I allowed him. I allowed him to take over my world so that I didn't have to think. I didn't have to do anything. I basically allowed him to take over. He didn't have my best interests at heart though, so that was a hard thing.
What do you mean by that?
I know that he thought this because we did have a conversation about this later, that he wanted me dependent on him so that I wouldn't leave. He knew that if I needed him and he pushed away a lot of other people, he isolated me. So I didn't have my family and my friends for support. The only person I could turn to was him, and that's exactly the position he wanted me in.
It sounds like you became his possession in a way.
100%. He's what is classed as a pathological liar, so he would make up unbelievable stories that sounded so unbelievable you couldn't doubt them. It's strange. I have to share this story because it really sums up what I had to deal with for the 6 years that I was with him. From the very first or perhaps the second conversation we ever had, he told me that he was one of six children and that he had a younger sister and her name was Ava. Over the years, he mentioned Ava many, many times. He told me about her different boyfriends she had, where she'd lived in Queensland and Sydney. He told me about her daughter, who was the same age as one of my middle children. He told me that she liked soccer. There was a lot of things that he told me about her. He told me that his credit rating was ruined because he got a car loan for his sister, but it was in his name. And then when she defaulted, it ruined his credit rating. All these things sound really plausible. It wasn't until almost a year after I had left him, so we'd been separated for almost a year, when I found out that he does not have a sister. For our whole life, he would use her as a third party to get things that he wanted or to be able to tell a lie. There was no way of me verifying this. He wasn't born in Australia, so his family is overseas, so I didn't have the opportunity to meet them. I did not know anyone that he worked with, and he didn't have any friends. I had no way of knowing anything about him except what he told me, and that was exactly his intention. So I couldn't find out if anything was true or false, because there was absolutely no one I could verify it with.
Not even his workplace?
No, no. I met the people he worked with twice in the first 3 months we were together, and then for the next 6 years I met no one or saw no one.
Did he actually work, do you think?
Oh, yes, he did, yes. I've seen payslips. So, yes, he did. But he liked to keep his life separate from me. He didn't want me to know anything about his real life.
You pick some very interesting people, Tanya.
Yeah, and I've learnt the reason for that too. It was all about myself, not about anyone else. I've definitely come a long way from that.
Lots of lessons there for you to really grow and develop, but we'll talk a little bit more about that a little bit later. I just wanted to find out a bit more about, just during this time of anxiety and depression, were you able to think of your kids like their day-to-day care, or was your husband taking care of them?
No, I could take care of them, although I did prefer him to do a lot of it because my mind was so full of anxiety, I could barely think. I had brain fog for so many years, and for anyone who's never experienced brain fog, it's probably the worst part of any of the things that I felt, because you can't think. It's like you're underwater. Your brain literally cannot form an idea or a thought. Everything is hard. Every single thought you have in your head is a real challenge. Yeah, I did do the day-to-day care and I went through life, but everything I did, I felt like I was just walking underwater or walking in this massive fog around me. I wasn't clear.
So it's constant struggle, really.
Absolutely.
This went on for some years. Yeah. What kept you actually moving forward?
For a long time, I wasn't moving forward, Sana. For a long time, I gave into it. That's the problem. I gave in. And I literally, as you mentioned earlier, I did have suicide attempts. I didn't want to be here. My children, who I love dearly, for a long time, they were my saving grace. And for a long time, they kept me going and putting one foot in front of the other. But there came a point where even that wasn't enough for me to want to be here. So I did give in for a really long time. How I got out of it, I think I had to choose, and I made a choice to be happy. It didn't make me happy. I had to really fight for that. But I did make the decision to be happy. And every day, in everything I did, I had to find the positive and find what made me happy. And eventually it took a life of its own and dragged me out of that.
Your kids are older now. Do they bring it up at all and you have conversations about it?
I probably try and talk to them more than they talk to me about it, because I keep trying to get them to understand certain things, especially the older ones. I want them to understand that nothing I did at that time was really me or was never my intention. So anything that I did that they felt badly about, I just wanted them to understand that it certainly wasn't what I wanted.
Do they understand that it wasn't about them?
Yes, they do. Yeah, I hope they do. It was never actually about them.
What about now?
I've never been happier. I feel complete in myself. I feel fulfilled. I'm grateful every day for life. I do sometimes stop and think, and it amazes me at how I could ever have felt like I didn't want to be alive, and I really didn't. Now I'm so far removed from that, it just feels like a dream. It doesn't feel, it's certainly not where I am now.
What steps did you take to get to this point?
Like I said, the first step was to make that decision and to really focus on what I wanted, and I wanted to be happy. I just wanted to be happy, and I had to really take the steps to get there. So for me personally, I really enjoy personal development. So I just surrounded myself with every positive quote you could find that were on my screensavers. I have pictures on the wall that have positive inspiration, because the more you see it, the more you start to feel it. I read everything that I could, and I did some short courses, and then eventually that led me to find NLP, which has for me been the absolute breakthrough. And where I was feeling very good, there was always some sort of underlying thought process in my head. So that basically allowed me to, I guess, overcome that residual that I had that was unconscious.
So the neuro-linguistic programming helped you see patterns of behaviour and helped you address those. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Like anybody, we can all do our best for a little time, but then we all go back to our patterns. So it helps you to recognise those patterns and learn how to change them.
Being a life coach and a timeline therapist as well, did they also help you move through your patterns of your behaviour and help you address these patterns?
Absolutely. So everything goes hand in hand. The first step is basically to remove the negative emotions. Once you are more in control of your emotion, you can then move forward. So a lot of people don't realise that step. They try to go from A to C, or from B to C, I should say, but they don't do A first. The first thing you really need to do is learn how to get a handle on your emotions. Otherwise, you just keep being triggered. And that's what would happen. I'd get into a really good place and then something would happen and then that would trigger me and I'm straight back down to my old patterns of the negative emotions. For me, getting a handle on my emotions has been the best thing I've ever done for myself.
Great. And that's carried you through?
Absolutely. It's life-changing. It really just allows you to see, to focus on what you want to rather than being completely overrun by your mind.
So what kind of patterns were screaming out at you that you thought, right, I'm going to tackle you and you and you first or second and third?
Look, this is where you have to get real, isn't it? This is where you have to get really honest with yourself. And I think for me, my first go-to thing was self-pity. I would really think, why me? Why do I keep finding men like this? Why do they keep treating me like this? Why is my credit rating ruined and I can't go and get a house? And, you know, you feel sorry for yourself because you're in a situation you don't want to be in and you know you didn't make that situation. What's really important is to stop the self-pity party and really focus on what you can do to change it. Instead of thinking about the past and what's happened, you start thinking, right, this is what's happened. Now what can I do? And you need to basically be in the present and look to the future. I think I was really stuck in the past for a very, very long time. So as soon as something would happen and you get triggered, bang, I'm back in the past of all these bad thoughts and all these bad memories and the emotions and the feelings that go with that. So, yeah, I think the biggest thing was to stop the self-pity. Secondly, I had to learn to control my anger, because anger for me was born from frustration, not being happy. Look, I don't even know how to explain it, but just things would happen and instead of crying about it, it would just basically make me very angry. So I had to learn to deal with that as well.
I'm trying to think where I read this, but I came across it and the statement is that anger can also be about deep-seated grief. And yes, just listening to your story, it makes sense that that could be where it stemmed from. You know, like it's really deep-seated and buried.
That's absolutely right, yeah. I wasn't angry. I was hurt. But the hurt didn't come out as hurt. It came out in anger. So, yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. It sounds like these modalities that you took up certainly helped you regain perspective.
Yes.
And have helped you move forward, but also stay grounded. You seem really grounded now. Is that fair to say? Or is that how you've always been?
No, it's definitely not how I've always been. I think it's how I always thought about myself, but it definitely wasn't how I was acting. So now I can actually be me and be true to me. And I'm so calm, which is the strangest feeling. And I keep having to check myself because I have felt anything but calm in the last decade. Everything upset me. Now I'm calm and I can think clearly, which is lovely, and I don't have that chatter in my head anymore. My head used to be so full. It was so full of chatter and negative self-talk. And now I don't hear anything. The silence is beautiful.
Yeah, it is good, isn't it? Mm. I mean, just with what's happening now in the world with COVID-19 and you're saying you feel really calm, is that also translating during this time?
It really is. I don't watch the news because it's something that if I see too much negative, I know that it's not good for me personally. I feel that I can easily succumb to that negative thinking. So I choose not to watch the news, but it is everywhere. It's all over Facebook. Everyone you talk to at the supermarket's talking about it. So I can't escape it, unfortunately, but I'm not buying into the fear. I am taking it very seriously. I really am. This is a horrendous thing that's happening in the world, and we have to be realistic and we have to be safe. Especially, we have to be mindful of not passing it to anyone else, even if we're not scared for ourselves. But it's not the illness, I think, that is overtaking the world with fear. People are actually taking on the fear and building on that rather than on just being safe.
I think you're right. You say that you can be your own hero. You are not what happened to you. You are what you choose to become.
Yes.
So what do you choose to become?
I personally just want to be happy, definitely, and that at the moment. There's always room for improvement. We can always, you know, keep building on that and keep adding value to our life, but I just want to be happy. But what I want bigger than just myself is to help others. I've been in a really dark place. I knew there were other people that felt like that, but when you're down there, only your pain's the important pain. So to me, it was the biggest thing in the whole world, no matter what anyone else was going through. And I felt very lonely, and I don't want anyone else to feel like that. I really want to be able to let people know that there is a way out of the darkness, that there is a way that they can find happiness again. They don't have to be there forever.
Now more than ever, people will be wanting to reach out to others with what's happening.
Absolutely.
What does courage mean to you?
I think for me, courage is taking that next step, you know, keep going, don't give in. No matter what's happened in the past, you can always create a better future, I think. And that's certainly what I'm trying to do for myself. I've been in situations where I've lost everything, financially at least. I lost my mind for a while. I lost my sanity. But I'm still here and I'm still kicking and I'm still wanting better. I think that's what courage is always wanting better.
I want to say thank you very much for being honest and for sharing your experience. Keep on staying courageous. And thank you so much for being on Courage Unraveled today.
You're welcome, Sana. Thanks so much for having me.
A pleasure. It never ceases to amaze me how strong the human spirit can be. There is so much richness in Tanya's lived experience. She's one strong and courageous person, and even more so for sharing her story. If by chance you have found this story challenging, please seek assistance from an appropriate healthcare professional or service near you. Thanks for listening today. If you're connected to Tanya's story and want to contact her directly, go to courageunraveled.com/podcasts and you will find Tanya's contact details. Do you like what you're listening to? Please subscribe via your favourite directory and leave a review or leave a review on the website. My name is Sana Turnock and I'm your host. Until next time.